Balls a strike. McCray at first. Jay Adams will set in, and he shows Bunton to bunt on the right field line. He's running after it. Broussard comes to throw it and makes the play to Conniff and gets it in time. He charges it, but nonetheless, a runner gets to second. So a ground out to first. McCray now at second, and Sebastian Coons, who was big his last time up, a two-run RBI single. And so this actually looks to be a pinch hitter. So it will be Riley Silva, a Nebraska Cornhusker from Cambridge, Ontario, Canada. So the lefty. So Riley Silva, who's batting a .288, he's got 15 hits on 52 at-bats. He's fourth in the team in batting average. So he's an outfielder, and Burnett serves high in a ball, 1-0. He's had trouble finding the strike zone. He's really worked a lot of fastballs in. A 1-0 count, one down. At second stands McCray. Riley Silva looks in on Burnett, and once more Jensen has to get to his feet to catch that ball, 2-0. Wisconsin Rapids, through three of their pitchers, they've had six strikeouts, and five of those have belonged to Howitt. One down. Silva will see the 2-0, and there it is. Clips the zone and a strike, 2-1. So Silva has appeared for Battle Creek here in the second half. 15 new guys, remind you, for Chris Clark and this coaching staff. Really revitalized this roster. That second is McCray. The 2-1, and Silva pops it into left in a high fly ball as Galliston makes a grab for two down. So that's what you need, those easy pop-ups. And now we head to the top of the order. JT Sokolov, 1-for-4 with a run. He got on base last time up on a fielder's choice. Prior to that, he had a single, but then he popped out to short and flew out to right. So Sokolov out of Illinois State from Harborville, Michigan. And Burnett sets and serves, and a swing and a ground ball over to Bobo, who has trouble fielding it. It goes through to Galliston on his way to third, and now runners are on the corners. So what seemed like it could have been a routine ground out play for Brendan Bobo goes through Bobo, through Brewer, and goes into left field. Not what you like to see, because that opens the door now for Blake Salomon, who had a two-run RBI double his last time at the plate. He's 1-for-4. Or I should say a two-run RBI double prior to the last time he was up. So his third at-bat, he had that. So two down, and Burnett sets and fires, and a swing and a high fly ball into right field. This is carrying, but Lordoy is there to make the catch. So that's the third out. So no run score for the Battle Jacks. We head to the bottom of the ninth. 4-4 ball game. Can the Raptors find a way to win this game here in Wisconsin Rapids? Stay with us.
Wake up and text. Text and eat. Mm-mm. Text and catch the bus. Text and miss your stop.
Wait.
Text and be late to work.
Sorry, I'm late.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time. Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Now, let's get back to exciting Raptors baseball here on WFHR.
Four-four ball game here in Wisconsin Rapids. Bottom of the ninth inning. Chris Conniff now 0-2 in the count as he fouls the left side. So Conniff, Jensen, and Johnson are due up. 8-9-1 in the order. Conniff, you know, for one with an RBI and a walk. And that sac fly RBI to right. No balls, two strikes here. Jake Jekulik with four strikeouts has really found his rhythm. And throws down low for a ball this time, 1-2. So Raptors, if they can't find a way to grab a run, we'll head into extras. But you hope that's not the case. And a ball, two strikes. Jekulik serves, and a swing and a ground ball over to the third baseman. Allgaier fields it up in the glove, and the throw to the diamond, throw across the diamond to first is on time. So Aloisio able to get the put out. And Allgaier with the assist and one down. So Levi Jensen, who's 0-2, has walked as well, has grounded out and popped out to third. One gone. Jensen really struggling at the plate. A .099 batting average as Jekulik right down the plate. A strike, 0-1. 0-1 count. Battle Creek 2 away. And the set in the serve up above the zone. 1-1. 1-1 count. One down, the 1-1, and Jensen is swinging a ground ball over to Adams, who dives low, feels it up, and throws it across to first. What a play there from Jay Adams. Man, he has done very well. A sliding play, gets down to his knees, lets that ball go right into his glove, attacks it, and throws it to first. So now, top of the order with Ty Johnson. And they're going to need his services here. He's 1-for-3 with a run. And Jekulik right down the plate. A strike, 0-1. So 0-1 count. Two down. And Johnson flies his left side. Made good contact, but it goes in foul territory. 0-2. So Johnson, one of four Raptors responsible from crossing home plate. Jekulik, four strikeouts. He's at 35 pitches. He shakes it off once more. He sets high in the sidearm and flies his left side. 0-2. So no balls, two strikes. 0-2 count. Two gone. One more strike puts us in extras. The 0-2 and a swing and a bouncer that looks to just pull out on the right field line out of play. A high bouncer. No two count. Two down. No balls, two strikes. Two down. Ty Johnson. He'll set in. Jekulik sets, fires, and Johnson flies this out left side once again. Near on the concourse. Johnson has been walked today, also with a strikeout. And the 0-2 outside for a ball. So a ball and two strikes, Ty Johnson. Will look in the 1-2. And Johnson claimed he might have been hit by a pitch there, but nonetheless comes in for a ball, 2-2. So a ground out to third from Conniff and a ground out to second from Jensen. The 2-2 home and a swing and a miss. Jekulik gets him once more up to his fifth strikeout. So we head into extra innings as this game is 4-4. Stay with us here on WFHR. Surely to be a quite an ending.
Kids across America are going to school hungry. Millions of kids every day. Hungry kids get sick more often and can struggle in school. It can be harder for them to focus and learn. But one simple thing can help change all of this for a hungry child in America. Good healthy food and the energy it brings. With help from caring people across America, No Kid Hungry is providing healthy meals and hope to hungry kids so they can build better futures.
We want to ensure that all of our kids have healthy meals every day.
Thank you.
Thank you for helping feed our kids.
To learn more about ending child hunger in America, go to helpnokidhungry.org today.
Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
When we got back from the Working Class Heroes radio tour, one of the things that people asked is, what'd you learn? As you're going through rural America, what'd you find? Found angry people, and angry for cause. But the sad reality is they've been fed decades of outrage candy, and they're angry at the wrong people. They're angry at their neighbors. They're not angry at the very wealthy where they should be. Be sure to tune in live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. across the Civic Media Radio Network, and have your voice heard.
Now, let's get back to exciting Rafters baseball here on WFHR.
So, top of the 10th inning, and well, so the rule is in the Northwoods League when you're in extra innings, you put already a runner on second to speed the game up, and that's exactly what's going on. So, Coltrane Rubner out of Davenport University is at second. And leading off is Jake Allgaier, the third baseman. So here in the extra innings, Allgaier 0 for 4 with a strikeout. So at second is Rubner. A 1-0 count here on Allgaier. Burnett on the mound once more. He throws a high 2-0. A 2-0 count. Rafters up to 8 hits in comparison to the Battle Jacks 4. Looking in is Burnett. He looks over at second. Rubner is there, the 2-0. And high of the zone, 4-ball, 3-0. Alec Burnett has thrown 2 walks. Hasn't recorded a strikeout yet, which is pretty rare at this time, given he's done 35 pitches. 3-0 count here for Jake Allgaier out of Western Illinois. And there paints the zone for a strike, 3-1. 3-1 count. Each team with 4 runs. This has been an entertaining game of 4-0 lead for the Rafters and then 4 unanswered for Battle Creek. Looking in is Burnett. He sets the 3-1 up above the zone for ball 4 and a fastball that can't work in at 86. So Allgaier now to first. So Tyler Ratliff now. Kyle Ratliff out of 0 for 4 with 2 strikeouts. So Ratliff flew out to left and popped out to right. Runners at first and second. Setting in up above the zone is Burnett. And, man, he's really struggling to find the strike zone. It looks like there's nobody warming up in the bullpen for the Rafters. So they're going to finish with him. Kind of an uncharacteristic night for the man out of Wagner College and from Columbus, Indiana. He sets, and there's the strike zone right down the play there, 1-1. Fastball at 87, runners on first and second. Nobody down. And Kyle Ratliff out of SIU, Edwardsville. Bats a 250, 25 hits out of Grand Rapids, Michigan. A second half guy is Chris Clark, field manager and also third base coach, talking to Ratliff right now. And it looks like he wants to get in with his team. He wants to have a kind of a meeting with his team in the dugout. So he's calling everybody over and, you know, basically discussing what they need to do and what has to happen. I think, you know, if you're Ratliff here, why don't you, you know, again, you want the Raptors, but why don't you not show a bunt? I mean, I feel like for that instance, if you show bunt and the ball drops, runners surely are going to advance, depending where it is. But I think if you're in this situation, if you're Kyle Ratliff, you definitely show a bunt. But runners on first and second. Brendan Bobo and Broussard are charging as Kyle Ratliff. Yep, now he'll show bunt and pulls it away, but it comes in four strikes. So Burnett now ahead in the count, 1-2. A ball and two strikes. Kyle Ratliff out of Grand Rapids, Michigan. 12 RBIs for him. And Burnett will now set in. Looks over at second. And the long stare where Rubner is. The 1-2 and a swing and a miss. Low, but a drop third strike. And he can't wait as... Well, it looks like the runners didn't even advance. It looks like just getting out was Ratliff. So he goes down, one down. So a big first out there for the Raptors. So a punch out there for Burnett. And Brock Daniels now will step in. So Daniels has walked twice. He's been hit by a pitch and grounded out to second. And a 1-0 count. Now, one gone. Daniels, the Missouri Tiger. 44 hits in total, 25 RBIs. The 1-0 and a ball ripped into right field, but that just pulls out on the first baseline. Swung hard from Daniels. And a ball and a strike. One gone. Runners at first and second. Can Wisconsin Rapids get out of this inning here, top of the 10th, as Daniels just has to slide away as that ball was coming in. Possibly could have hit him on the right thigh, but nonetheless, the count is 2-1. Burnett is going to have to bend in low. Anthony, he's thrown two walks, no strikeouts. One down. And the 2-1 to Daniels, and a swing and a liner that goes above the head over at Conniff. On his way from third is Rubner, charging home, and Battle Creek takes the lead 5-4. First time they've had a lead this game. And now runners are on the corners. What a time for that to come, and man, oh man. Runners now at first and third, and Battle Creek... Two runs in the sixth, two runs in the seventh. The comeback kids, and Wisconsin Rapids is going to have to just not allow any more damage. Anthony Aloisio, who's 0-for-4 with a strikeout. And Burnett sets in, fires on his way to first is Daniels. On his way to second is Daniels. Now puts it 2 in scoring position. One down, and now, you know, you give up a run, and now that, you know, they could have that, but two runs is definitely hard to make up if you got to look to just find a way to get out of this, and the 1-0 swing and a miss, 1-1. So runners at second and third. Allgaier at third, Daniels at second. A one-run RBI double for Daniels. The 1-1 and the throw high, 2-1. Two balls, a strike, one down. Battle Creek has really just found a way to get back in the Raptors up 4-0 heading to the top of the sixth. And the 2-1 down the plate, though, for a strike. And paints the zone 2-2. 2-2 count. One gone. Infield shifted in for Wisconsin Rapids. Conniff, Brewer, Bobo, and Broussard have all taken about 3 to 4 steps forward. The 2-2 swing and a miss. Strike three. He goes down. So a big out there and a big strikeout. Alec Burnett records his first. Aloisio gets retired. Blake McCray now will step in. He's walked three times and has popped out to the catcher. So only 0-for-1. But he's also responsible for crossing home plate as well. Runners at second and third. Setting in and a swing and kind of a sharply hit ball that drops into right center field. A run gets home and now the second one on his way and he'll score. Battle Creek up 7-4 now. So Blake McCray, a two-run RBI single. And now, just like that, three runs for Battle Creek. They're up 7-4. Kind of a jam shot that just dropped in to right field in between Conniff at second and Lordoy in right. Battle Creek, seven runs off of six hits. Burnett is going to have to regather. Fires over at first. Jay Adams is due up. Seven unanswered runs for the Battle Jacks. Wisconsin Rapids just has let this game slip away. They'll have a chance in the bottom of the 10th, but you can't allow any more bleeding here for Battle Creek. Burnett throws outside for a ball 1-0. Burnett has thrown two walks, and I tell you, I mean, you brought Howitt, Jones, and Burnett. Howitt does a great job. He gives up two runs and five strikeouts, but those two runs did pose crucial because it gave, you know, Battle Creek some life. They cut it to 4-2, and then they got two more runs. And then, just like that, it was a 4-4 game. The 1-1, a swing and a miss low, 1-2. But when Devin Jones came on, and you know he's a great pitcher, but he's really just still getting accustomed to the Northwoods League. He went an inning, 34 pitches, gave up a hit and two runs, and also three walks as well. That right there made it like, okay, now it's 4-4. And a 1-2 count. Burnett looking to retire this side, and a swing and a pop-up into the first baseman. Broussard reaches out and makes the grab, but three-run score for the Battle Jacks. They're in front 7-4. We head to the bottom of the 10th. Can the Rafters make something happen? We'll step away here on WFHR.
Hi, I'm Ryan Blaney, a third-generation race car driver, and we dedicate a lot of our time to going as fast as possible. My Grandpa Lou is the reason why my dad and I started racing, and I'm really proud to follow in his tracks. But when my grandpa was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was a very unexpected bump in the road for us. I've learned a lot on this journey with my Grandpa Lou, and the memories of my grandpa will always be with me. It's important to notice if older family members are acting differently, experiencing problems with their memory, or having trouble with routine tasks. Talking about Alzheimer's can be really tough, but if you notice something, have a conversation with your loved one. Encourage them to see a doctor or offer to go with them. Early detection of Alzheimer's can give your family time to explore support services, make a plan for the future, and access available treatments. The Alzheimer's Association provides care, support, and research to help you take control of the situation with your family and manage the disease together. If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. Visit alz.org/time-to-talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Hey everybody, glad you could join us. I'm Tim Hubbelt, better known as the Polka Guy, on the Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show.
Join Tim every Saturday and Sunday for a great variety of polkas, waltzes, and more. Wake up at 7 a.m. on Saturday morning to get the weekend started on the right foot, then enjoy a lively Sunday afternoon at 1 p.m. Same great show, two different times, one fun weekend. The Sunshine Polka Party Variety Show, 7 a.m. Saturdays and 1 p.m. Sundays, only on WFHR, locally grown radio.
Let's get back to the ballpark and more Wisconsin Rapids Rafters baseball on WFHR.
Bottom of the 10th inning, Battle Creek in front 7-4 as Brandon Markarian will step on for the Battle Jacks at the University of Indianapolis, a junior from Glendale, California. And man, oh man, three runs in the top of the 10th for the Battle Jacks. They have really just battled back in this game. And Raptors are going to have to dig deep. They're going to have to find ways to get a run. They haven't gotten a run since the bottom of the 5th. They've been held scoreless for four straight innings. Jorge Degatti will lead off. So Markarian, six games appeared in with an 0-1 record, 12 innings of work, 15 hits and 8 runs allowed with 8 strikeouts. So the left-hander will go to work on Degatti. Jorge Degatti now. They're going to need his services. He's 1-for-3 with a run as Markarian delivers in with a strike, 0-1. So you have Ty Johnson at second. You have that runner. So 0-1 count. Raptors need momentum. They're going to need four runs. At least three. The 0-1 foul backside, 0-2. So no balls, two strikes. If Raptors can't find a way to win this game, they drop five straight, which is four straight has already been their longest losing streak of the season. 0-2 count. Markarian now likes to pitch on Jorge Degatti, who's gotten a run, a walk, and a strikeout. He turns and fires outside of the zone on a ball, 1-2. There's a breaking ball at 81. Johnson at second. If Degatti can find a way to get on base, he would put the tying run at the plate. Markarian turns his body quickly and throws the 1-2. It's kind of got an odd release about him. As soon as he is setting to throw that ball, he kind of turns his body about 90 degrees in 2-2. Two balls, two strikes. Markarian sets in. There's a ball way outside, 3-2. So three balls, two strikes here. This would put possibly Degatti at first and Johnson at second with Bobo up. Markarian now will look in on Degatti. He sets the payoff. Swing and a miss low. Degatti goes down. That's a huge out there. So Brandon Markarian records a strikeout. Degatti goes down swinging. And Brendan Bobo now will step in. Bobo, they'll need him. 3-for-4 with a 2 RBI day and a run. Markarian will set in on Bobo. Bobo's had the biggest day yet. He misses low. And his strike comes in, 0-1. Had that solo home run in the bottom of the 5th. Well, he absolutely sent a ball to the moon. It was 406 feet back into right field. It's 315 to right field. He sent that 406 feet. But so they're going to need him right now. The 0-1 and swing and a miss down low, 0-2. So Bobo down in this count. You have Ty Johnson at second. On deck is Orlando Lordoy. No balls, two strikes. 3-for-4 with a run. The 0-2 from Markarian bounces in the dirt. Johnson thought about going three, but retreats back to the second base. Brendan Markarian already with a strikeout. Through three pitchers, Battle Creek has recorded 8 strikeouts and 6 walks. So they've definitely gotten the better of the pitching staff. The 1-2 just low in a ball this time, 2-2. So Brendan Bobo right now, if he can see two more balls or get a hit, he just needs to get a hit. He needs to get his fourth hit because you can't worry about, rather, if it's a ball or a strike, you got to go out there and swing the bat. The 2-2 from Markarian, a swing and a miss. Bobo went after it. He goes down on a changeup at 74, gets him on the inside corner. And now, one out away from putting this thing to bed, Battle Creek would find a way to win. So Lordoy, 1-for-2 with an RBI and a walk. So possibly the final batter, Johnson at second. And Mark Kerrion threw two batters, two strikeouts. And there he goes to work once again. It's a fastball down the plate, 0-1. So no balls a strike. They're going to need the Panamanian from Panama City. Lordoy batted a 4-0-1 at Benedictine at Mesa. They're going to need that kid here. The 0-1, he doesn't even swing at it. It goes low in a ball, 1-1. That's a 257, though, with four hits this season on 15 at-bats prior to today. He's at an RBI, but recorded his second with a sac fly RBI to bring Degatti home in the first. The 1-1 from Arcarian. Lordoy flies this out left side, and now one strike away. And Battle Creek would take down Wisconsin Rapids here in the first game of the series and lead the season series 2-1. Rafters need life. They need anything right now. Arcarian with the ball behind his back. He's on the third base side of the rubber. He shakes it off. He's got the long stare at home. And now trying to find the right pitch. Now he'll come set with the ball in his glove. He kicks, turns, and fires the 1-2. And just low of the zone, but Coons likes the pitch. 2-2 count. So two balls, two strikes. As it actually looks to be Spencer Verberg, the catcher. And once more, deuces run across the board. Arcarian now will turn, set the 2-2. Inside of the zone, 4-3-2. On deck is Broussard. One strike away, or one ball away from putting Lordoy at first and keeping this inning and this game alive. The count runs full with two down here, bottom of the 10th. Johnson on second, Rafters trail 7-4. Arcarian sets, serves, and Lordoy lines this into right center field. This drops Johnson on his way home, and he keeps the game alive. Orlando Lordoy, a big hit. 7-5 is the score. Tying run now at the plate. A big hit there for Orlando Lordoy on a full count delivery as Chris Clark stopping right now and going out to the dugout. So Garrett Broussard now is up. A big hit for Lordoy. Two down. As Arcarian very frustrated about that. Didn't want to come out, but everybody in his team, his entire team leaving the dugout to give him praises. And so the last Battle Jack pitcher for tonight, he'll step in. So, you know, good for Arcarian, though. I tell you, two big strikeouts for him in the bottom of the 10th. So it looks to be the last pitcher of the night to get one more out for Battle Creek. And this will be Dylan Howenitz out of Westchester University. So Howenitz, a junior from Archbald, Pennsylvania. He'll be the last one to step in and to, for the Battle Jack's sake, to close it. He's had seven saves, though, in All-Star, 1-for-2, 1-2 record, 32 and a two-thirds innings pitched, 33 hits, 14 runs, 29 strikeouts. I mean, when he has seven saves, he's been a big time. So 3.31 ERA. His last game he appeared in was on July the 18th, where he went two-thirds inning and got the save. So their best closer, and Howenitz, this sidearm, looking to record what would be, again, another win for Battle Creek and another save for him. So he's got a wicked sidearm. He's got a flick of the wrist when he releases that ball. So you have Lordoy at first, your 7-5 game. You have the tying run at the plate with Broussard with two down. And the question is, what do you do? Well, you got to find ways to get on base and to keep this thing alive. And that becomes discipline at the plate. Howenitz, though, is somebody that can throw strikeouts. 29 Ks for him on the season. He got his record high in Ks twice. He had four Ks against Kenosha and Traverse City, both Four strikeouts that game back in early June. So Howenitz, well, he's the guy to close. Can the Rafters pounce on a little bit of momentum here? Garrett Broussard 0 for 4 with a strikeout. Lordoy at first. His second RBI of the day. A one-run RBI single into right center field. Howenitz delivers up, and boy, he just found the upside of the zone 0-1. A slow-moving curve at 66. So the sidearm, no balls a strike. Howenitz out of Westchester University. He sets and turns the 0-1 in a swing, and a ball popped up in the air. Running after it is Spencer Verberg, who catches it on the third baseline, and that will do it. Battle Creek comes from behind as they win 7-5 here in Wisconsin Rapids. Rafters up 4-0, but then the Battle Jacks, 7 unanswered runs. Rafters got one back, but it wasn't enough. Rafters out-hit Battle Creek 9-6 as well, and a really frustrating game for Wisconsin Rapids. They've now lost 5 straight games and 6 of their past 7. It's really been a tough time for this ball club. Just their pitching hasn't been as good as it normally has. Their hitting hasn't come up in big moments. And when you have a 4-0 lead, they just couldn't find a way to win. Battle Creek, hats off to them. A big win. And a 7-5 game. So Battle Creek improves to 11-8 overall. Wisconsin Rapids drops to 7-10. Staying at 5th in the Great Lakes West Division. So the Battle Jacks have been playing good baseball. Wisconsin Rapids has not. So they're going to have to look to end this losing streak tomorrow night as they host Battle Creek once more here at Witter Field, 6:35 for the first pitch. So for everybody at Wisconsin Rapids Rafters, for the players, coaches, and staff, for everybody at the studio at WFHR, my name is Joey Fear, saying so long from Witter Field. We'll see you tomorrow night. Have a good night, everybody.
Music industry, the taxi driving industry. But tech companies faced something in Hollywood that they never expected, and that is a very strong union town. That's why we're standing up. That's why we're fighting back. And it's easy to think, oh, a bunch of rich writers and a bunch of rich actors are just like whining and complaining, but it's not.
No.
That's why I wanted to write this piece, because I wanted to frame it in the way that it should be framed, and that's that this is truly the labor fight of our generation. It boils down to tech versus humanity, right?
No, and the reality is you're right, and because people think Hollywood, they think the big stars, and the reality is the vast majority of people who work in film or TV or writers, these are people who are just barely getting by and maybe having to work second, third, fourth jobs to follow their passion. So when I heard that extras would be going to a set and having their image basically cloned in perpetuity, I'm going, well, that can't happen. You have to strike when that's being thrown on the table. But I haven't heard anyone else tell me that than what Patty shared with me.
The sad thing is that extras who are non-union have already signed away their likeness without even knowing it, because they didn't know what they were signing. And these AI companies have taken their likeness in perpetuity. But that's why you need a strong union behind you to fight whatever's happening clandestinely.
Now, how I've had a couple of people ask me how long I think this is going to last. And my answer is always, hopefully one day longer than the executives want it to go, because I want the workers to win in this. Ultimately, you've got to be there as long as you have to be, because this is really your existence, isn't it? I mean, if you're not being paid for the work that you're doing, if your likeness is being stolen, if your creativity is being stolen, because I look at this streaming stuff, you're not being paid for. Why would anybody want this job? And to me, if you can't make a living at this, maybe it's time to shut it down where we are right now.
And essentially, that's why the leadership of our guild decided to fight back, because the rich folks, they're not affected by this. The showrunners, the writer-producers, they're fine. What they're truly fighting for is the preservation of writing as a career. It's going to be decimated. We are not doing any mentorship. We're not properly compensating the next generation of writers. And this AI fight, this fight with artificial intelligence, is very scary. In fact, when our field leadership went in to talk to the studios, they didn't even think it was a problem. They're like, okay, we can all agree that scripts are written by human beings, right? And the negotiators on the other side were like, well, we don't want to take away the right for the studios to use AI to generate scripts. And we were like, oh, hell no. Now we're striking because we know what you're doing. Last time they said, oh, we don't want to talk about internet right now because who knows what it'll do. And then streaming became a thing. So they're already thinking into the future. And in their future, right, the number one rule of economics, how do you make a profit? You exploit labor. And in their future, not only do they exploit labor, they evaporate and decimate labor. Because in their perfect worlds, a season of television is no longer written by 10 to 14 writers. It is written by one writer and one AI machine. That's what the future that they want. And that's the future that we have to put an end to.
And they get to keep all the profits. And this is one of those moments where, you know, I've been talking about this study that was done about 5 years ago that said, you know, in 20 years, half of the jobs that we do currently will all be replaced by robotics and AI. This is the front line of that. Now, look, there are other jobs that have been replaced already, but this is a mass scale. This is an industry that's been taking hits for years. But this is the end of you guys. There's I see nothing left on the other side, especially when you're talking about the streaming stuff. Because again, how writers, as I understand, and you help me if I'm wrong here, but as they're paid by you know repeats by being things being put re-aired and paid for,
yeah.
And residuals that come over the years.
You're talking about residual checks, which by the way, the Writers Guild of America fought for and won back in 1953. These are fights we already had 70 years ago. The thing that changed is that tech companies have come into town and try to rewrite the laws, the rules, the history of it all. Because let me just, so your audience could understand, residual checks and broadcasting and like the networks that we see for free on TV, right? Because they're supported by advertising and broadcasting. When my episode of television reruns, I get a check for that. And these residual checks, not only did we earn, they keep us afloat in between jobs or when we're trying to develop a new show. It's how we provide for our families. So a perfect example is a writer shared recently, he used to write a procedural show for broadcast. And his residual checks were close to $22,000 every time one of his episodes re-aired, $22,000. He went to write for a streamer, right? The Netflix, the Amazons, the Apple, Hulu of the world. His residual checks now for that same show is now $120.
Wow.
From $22,000 to $120. That is what is happening in Hollywood, and that is what the tech companies are trying to get away with.
So ultimately, what you're talking about is a massive redistribution of wealth
away
from working people to these executives and the shareholders.
Correct.
And that's what this fight is about, you know, because I've had people email me and say, well, you know, you greedy union members always going on strike because there is a, you know, it's hot, you know, strike summer. It's hot labor summer. And we are seeing people who have had enough coming out of the pandemic, you know, taking on that title of hero and essential and all that and now demanding to be treated as such. But you're just trying to fight for your existence.
But Rick, you're bringing up the most perfect point in the world. The studios can 100% afford to give us what we're asking for. What they cannot afford is to show the world that strikes work. That is what they're really afraid of.
No, and that's all companies. You know, I'm looking at what's going on at UPS and the potential of a strike there, and I hope that doesn't get ugly. But you're spot on. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show here with Raphael Augustine. He's the CEO of the Latino Film Institute, also a board member at Mother Jones. He's got a piece at Mother Jones I hope you'll take a look at. I'm a striking TV writer, and here's why we're doing this. Now, again, you know, are we Luddites? Are we saying that we, you know, technology should be destroyed? Because I had some people asking, saying, hey, you know, is it that we don't want to use technology? You know, what's the gist? You're not against technology. You're just saying, I'd prefer it not replace me, and I would prefer it not put my face on.
Correct. And in the case of the writers, it was very simple. We wanted to come to terms that all scripts are generated by human beings. And writers can use AI as research or as support. But what you can't do is generate scripts directly from AI. For many reasons outside of preserving the profession of writing, we have to get legislation in here. We have to get copyright violation clause in here. I mean, if an AI, if you tell an AI machine, give me a Quentin Tarantino script, it will spit out a Quentin Tarantino script. But how does it know what a Quentin Tarantino script is? It was fed so many already. So when we're talking about AI in Hollywood, we're really talking about plagiarism machines.
No, and that's where I think Sarah Silverman is now engaged in a lawsuit on this very thing, that nothing AI does is original, and it's all copywritten, and it's basically just theft. Is that the way forward? Because I know you said there needs to be some legislation, and I wish we were a functional country that could do some of that, but I just don't see that we're I don't see we're capable of doing something that is that big, given our political climate. Or do you disagree?
I have hope. I truly have hope, and more importantly, I'm hoping that Hollywood and California can lead on this. There are a few legislators, state and federal, who are currently meeting on this, and we hope to set the standard of how to push back and how to fight for this. Unfortunately, everyone is so confused by it. They don't even know what to do. I mean, look at our legislators in Washington. They can barely get through a hearing on Facebook, for crying out loud.
Yeah, yeah. But I got to tell you, I loved the one of the passages you wrote about, you know, not being the typical union striker. And you wrote, we're not rugged, we're neurotic. Our carpal tunnel doesn't come from lifting heavy things, but from typing too much. But like every other union member in this country, we are over-caffeinated and we know our worth. And we refuse to be exploited. And that to me is really an important line that I think every working person in this country, regardless if you're currently in a union or not, should be taking to heart. The fact that your labor is worth something, the hours of your life are worth something, and you should be demanding better.
And the reason why I wanted to point that out is because being on the picket lines, what I've seen most is the support that we get from other union members. It never comes from like the expensive Teslas that drive by. It comes from the big rigs. It comes from the bus drivers. It comes from the electrical vehicles. It comes from the county utility vehicles. It comes from other union members in Los Angeles. And that's the beauty.
No, and this is where I've been saying, Raphael, for a very long time. And I every time there's a strike, anyone who's listening in a strike area, go adopt a striker, spend the day and walk with them, bring them a coffee, a soda, a dozen donuts, a pizza, something, but spend time with that striker, hear their stories, and get more bodies on the line. Because as I've always said, the bigger the strike, the bigger the picket line, the shorter the strike. So we need people to get out there. But this is one of those moments where, you know, I keep saying that the working class can unite. The way we reunite this country is to reunionize and get people out on those picket lines fighting for something. Because look, I knew some old Teamsters back, you know, they fought the battles of the 50s and 60s. And the old timers would tell the stories of, you know, how they went out on strike every couple of years just to get people to feel the sense that they fought and won something. Because if you fought for something and you won something, you're never going to give it up. So I see this as a bunch of writers and a bunch of people who, you know, you're right, they're not lifting boxes. Them standing strong 12 weeks into this, them fighting for better, we can all do it.
Well, we could all do it. But you also bring up an important point that the middle class of this country and the better working conditions that we have all were built on the backs of strong unions and strong union fights and strikes. I pointed out at the top that we went from having 34% of our labor belonging to a union in the 50s to only 10%. That's what's so heartbreaking. I agree with you. We have to unionize more. The working class, the labor force only makes a stronger America, a stronger economy, and a stronger nation.
So lastly, last question I've got for you, because I want to make sure people understand the gist of what's going on. We talked about the AI. We talked about, you know, keeping your face and your copyright and your intellect. Also about the residuals and the pay structure. Is there more to this that we need to know? Is there more that we need to get behind?
Data. Unfortunately, these tech companies hide behind data. And the problem is, are we overpaid for shows that are not being seen on streamers? Or are we underpaid for big hits? Spoiler alert, it's the latter, right?
Yeah.
So we're trying to get compensated for the success of his work, for our work as well. If it's a flop, we understand why we won't get paid that much. But if it's a gigantic hit, like Squid Game, you saw the hundreds of millions of dollars they made, and that creator made nothing from that. At least not from season one. He's probably fighting for a much bigger season two contract. But that's the point. Like, we need to see data. We need to be honest about the data. Broadcast television for decades always show their data. The streamers and tech companies go, oh, we don't share our data. But guess what? Netflix is now going to provide an ad-supported service, which means that Netflix realized, oh, we need advertising to make money. Oh, we might look at this old model of doing television. But then you can't tell the labor force, oh, we can't show you our data.
Yeah.
But you are going to show your data to advertisers? I'm sorry, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, this is a reason to walk out of Netflix. This is a reason to strike and to carry on. But Rafael, I appreciate the time. I want you to come back and keep us up to date on what's going on as this continues. I'm hoping it's short, but I fear this is going to be a long one.
One day longer, one day stronger, my brother.
There you go. I appreciate the time, Rafael Agustin. He's the CEO of the Latino Film Institute, also a board member over at Mother Jones. Make sure you check out his article. I am a striking TV writer, and here's why we're doing this. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a quick look at it. Can take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. Listen to the Rick Smith Show. Good working people. Think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1899. That was the day New York City newsboys went on strike. A newspaper article noted, "The Newsboys Union has decided to tie up the World and the Journal. They have struck for better rates on the evening editions of these papers, and their demands have been refused. Therefore, beginning with the first appearance of the redheaded extras this noon, the boys are going to refuse to sell. Envoys have been going up and down the line passing the word. Ye don't sell no more World or Journal, or ye get your face punched in, see?" The main issue of the strike was that the papers had sold for more money during the Spanish-American War, as people were clamoring for news of the conflict. But as the war ended, the boom dried up. The newsboys had paid more for the papers, but could not make the money back from their readers. The article quoted one of the striking newsboys saying, "They put the prices to 6 papes for a dime when the war began. Then, when the war quit and there wasn't no such sale for the papes, and we wanted to get them 2 for a cent again, but they wouldn't. That's what we're going on strike for now. The cops is all busy, and we can do any scab newsboys that show his face without police interference. We're here for our rights, and we will die defending them. At the rates they give us now, we can't make on ye 4 cents on 10 papes. the Pulitzer-owned World, and the Hearst-owned Journal did not reduce prices after the war. But, in the end, the newspaper's management did agree to buy back any unsold copies. And thus, the strike ended on August 2nd, marking a small step forward. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, TheRickSmithShow.com. So I got to finish up with this, the Texas governor. Greg Abbott doing some pretty sleazy, pretty ugly, pretty horrible stuff. Maybe you've seen the stories of what they're doing down on the Rio Grande. But evidently Abbott and his goons, I got to tell you, you know, it's almost like Nazi stuff. It's the cruelty is the point kind of stuff. The New York Times had a long story on the tactics that Texas is using on migrants, you know, trying to come into the country. Now, look, I don't know the answer to our immigration problems. I don't have all the answers. I have some ideas, some things that we could be doing, should be doing. But the one thing that I do know that we don't deal with it by drowning children. I'm pretty sure that's not the pro-life position, or is it? Now remember, you got Abbott, pro-life guy, putting nets in the water so that people get tangled up, doing all kinds of things to cause injuries, and the one story where evidently there's like a barbed wire fence that goes across. People threw some stuff over it to try and get over it. The border patrol people I think the Texas soldier, whoever they were, are ripping this stuff away so people are getting injured. And go back to Texas, or go back to Mexico, and you go again. Don't know the answer entirely. Congress should probably do its job. But this kind of cruelty, and I know, here's the thing, I know, the cruelty is the point. The more cruel that you can be to people, the I guess as the mindset goes, the Stephen Millers of the world would have you, if there's a boat coming over, sink it. Because if you remember during the Trump years, they actually wanted to use drones to sink boats coming from other places. If you got migrants coming here, sink the boat, make them swim. Maybe they can fight with the sharks. I don't know that that's the right answer. I have said that, and I go back to 2010 and 11 with the Tea Party, who were all tingly in the panties over foreign aid. I was saying that the way that you keep people in their countries, a lot of foreign aid, make it more desirable to stay home, because I can't imagine people want to walk 1,000 miles. I can't imagine people want to swim across the sludge river. I can't imagine that they want to get possibility of being killed or mutilated or maimed. I can't imagine they want that. But the prospect of there being something better at the end of the horrible journey, because it's so desperate at home, maybe something we should possibly think about. Now, I have my conservative friends who say, well, it's not our job to be, the person who makes all the rest of the world better. Yeah, kind of is. We've kind of put ourselves in that position. We've kind of done that. And if you're not solving some of the problems with your neighbors, if you're not a good neighbor, you're going to have problems. And this is one of those things where, man, the cruelty being the point, I got to think in 20, 30, 50, 100 years, there's going to be people who are around reading the stories of what Abbott and what conservatives are doing. The kind of cruelty.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Lows level off around 54 overnight under clear skies. Winds out of the north, 5 to 10 miles per hour. Mainly sunny skies and calm. Tomorrow, chance for isolated thunderstorms. Daytime highs approaching 81. Slight chance for scattered storms again. Tomorrow night, lows dip down to about 57. Partly cloudy skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 66.
Hi, I'm Mandy Roberts, financial advisor with Thrivent. I'm here to help you assess your finances and find solutions to meet your needs. Let's ensure you have a strategy for success. To get started, call 715-470-1303. That's 715-470-1303.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
You're tuned into your home for the Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
This is CBS News